Hey guys, my name is Anthony Bandiero, attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing another webinar. And if you're not joining us live, that means you're watching us on demand, which is great, but just please understand that several several hundred of your fellow cops are on this and they're live. So you're going to see me like looking off screen. That just means that I'm actually reading their comments and so forth. A lot of them like to make jokes. And actually, I encourage it. Good, clean fun is absolutely encouraged here. I like to say that this is like camaraderie. You know, also, let's be honest. It's 6 o'clock, you know, Pacific time. That means that it's 9 o'clock and so forth Eastern time. And a lot of people are off duty. I like to say half of the cops on here are drunk and half of them are on duty. All right. So laws and agency SOPs may be more restrictive. That just means, is Mark here, Rick? Our Mark Munson? No, different Mark. Laws and agency SOPs. Oh, Nitten. No, that's not Mark. Laws and agency SOPs might be restrictive, standard operating procedures. I'm just going to tell you what I think the Fourth Amendment requires when it comes to these technology issues. And if you've had any doubts with the legality of your actions, push up the chain. It's always nice that you can push the decision of these issues sometimes on a person who has stars and bars on their collar and on the shoulder. And then finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney, but I'm not your attorney. So if I say anything where your attorney disagrees with, guess who's going to win? The one that's paid by you. Okay. So drones, LPRs, poll cameras, we have a lot to cover. I hope you get something out of this. I'm going to do my best job. Let's start with the hardest subject too. First, right? I love drones. I love them. I own them. I'm taking my Part 107 license in November just to kind of get that experience because I just love drones and I think that they're the wave of the future. You know, there has been certain seminal technologies that have really changed the way that law enforcement operates. You know, the car, right? The motor vehicle, radios, and so forth. And pistol braces have totally changed the landscape of law enforcement. And so we want to acknowledge that drones is absolutely up there, right? Absolutely up there with the police radio and the police computer and radio. Computer's the other one and the car is over. So generally speaking, the way we start this conversation with drones is activity, a person, you know, knowingly exposes to the public is generally not subject to the Fourth Amendment protections. Now, I want to let you guys know that because the courts are about 10 years behind technology, right? I mean, the Supreme Court is, we're not close to taking up a Supreme Court, a drone case yet. We're just not there. And the Supreme Court loves to try to see what the lower courts are going to do. They try to look for, you know, circuit splits where the Ninth Circuit says there's a search and the Fifth Circuit says it's not a search. They want those things to happen first, and then they start taking up these cases to resolve these splits. I think that's kind of what they're doing. They're like the referee, right? But here's the problem. The problem is that drones do cause a lot of political and judicial officers concern, okay? I got to tell you, like, I fly my drone all the time, okay? And my neighbors hate it. They really do. They don't. I've only had one person express to me that they don't like me flying my drone, okay? But even if they don't express it to me, I just know that when they see that thing flying, you know, near their property, that they would love to find out who the hell is doing it and tell them to stop it, right? And so maybe I would feel the same way, right? So those privacy concerns, right? Those issues where you're seeing this drone in the air, it's, you know, we can say it's similar to a helicopter, but really is it similar to a helicopter? Probably not, but we're going to start with helicopter law and work our way backwards. So, but the idea here is that what people expose to the public, how do you protect that, right? Why do you give that protection? And I think our first seminal case that we got to talk about is Katz versus United States. So what happened here in a nutshell is that Charles Katz is a bookie making his wagering phone calls from LA, and he's calling his counterparts in Miami and Boston every day from the same phone booth. He's actually a man of habits, and the FBI catch on to this, and they actually put a tape recorder, right, the old tape reels, on top of the phone booth, and they listen to his conversation. And they say, look, this is not a search. It's not a trespass. It's not, you know, it's not a seizure. You can't seize sound waves. And we go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I got to tell you, Supreme Court wasn't too pleased about how the FBI was acting, and they thought that this kind of crossed a constitutional line. Now, in all fairness to my FBI brothers and sisters, they really didn't know better at the time, because at the time in 1967, the law was clearly in favor of the FBI. There was a case called Olmstead from the 1920s where the Supreme Court kind of implied, and not implied, probably more expressly said that doing this was not a search. But I think they just went a little too far in this context. And the Supreme Court said, look, this falls under the ambit of the Fourth Amendment. Number one is, what we're going to look at is, number one, did the suspect expect privacy, right? When Charles Katz went into that phone booth, with a lot of people do not know what that even is. It's like a first generation iPhone. When he went into that phone booth and closed that door and didn't talk so loud that other people nearby could hear him, he didn't know about the tape recorder. Did he expect privacy? Did he do those things expected, you know, that he would expect that his conversation would be private? Is this something that society would expect to be reasonable, right? It's one thing to genuinely, sincerely think that you have privacy, right? Maybe I'm rolling around in my stolen Mercedes, right? My S60, whatever. And I'm like, nobody knows I stole this car. It's a VIN swap. It's, you know, cold plated. And I think that I have privacy, right? Well, okay. Maybe if I genuinely, you know, I swear on the one hand on a Bible and where, you know, under oath, right? On the Bible. But is that just, would society recognize that as reasonable? Of course not. Maybe both are unreasonable and both are required, right? And so this is the reasonable expectation of privacy test, the REP test, the R to the E to the P. If you have a reasonable expectation of privacy under this test, then that is a search under the Fourth Amendment. Now, that does not mean that you can not do it, right? You may be able to do it if you have consent, a recognized exception, or a warrant, right? I have a reasonable expectation of privacy in my man purse, right? The thing that I put around my shoulder when I go to the store. By the way, my man purse has a gun in it, so it's not so much of a feminine thing. But the thing is, do I have an expectation of privacy in my man purse? Absolutely. Can you search it? Sure. If you have a recognized exception, like searches into arrest or inventory. Okay, so, all right. So how does this test apply to the drone, right? Well, let's start off with some concepts here. It's a satchel. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. I'm going to keep saying to my friends that it's a satchel. I just don't think they're going to buy it. I think they're going to still keep hounding me that why are you wearing the man purse, European man bag? Either way, I'm good to go. I'm confident in myself. And so this U.S. versus Mathias case is a good place to start, right? So, Caprice. So what happened here is an officer looked over a fence, okay, and he saw marijuana. Now, I know it's just a head looking over a fence. It's not a drone. But think about the concept here. Can we glean some constitutional principles out of this? And I think that the answer is yes, right? So the officer is on this 18-strip piece of land next to the defendant's fenced-in property. He looked over the fence. He saw the marijuana. And, you know, he didn't climb the fence. He didn't do a pull-up on the fence. But he did see marijuana growing in plain view. Now, what the court said, the strip of land was open view, so open field. So the officer was not on curtilage. We don't have any of those issues. But what they said, look, we turn now to the fence. The presence of the fence is sufficient to establish that Mathias manifested a subjective expectation of privacy in the backyard. He should expect that people cannot see in his backyard. But it's a two-part test. Accordingly, the only remaining question is whether society would recognize the expectation as reasonable. We conclude it would not. the mere fact that an individual has taken measures to restrict some views of his activities does not preclude an officer's observations from a public vantage point where he has a right to be and which renders his activities clearly visible. Now, you know, of course, we can, talk about, looking over the fence and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's just not reasonable that this guy should expect that nobody ever could look in his backyard. Okay. I think that's like the main point here. So views from the ground with the naked eye are not searches unless there is a constitutional intrusion first. So far, so good. Let's make that next step. The next step is People versus Arno, okay? This officer used some binoculars, and defendants were convicted of possessing obscene films. Now, this is actually involving the Playboy Corporation, okay? And what happened here is LAPD, and I wish I was on this case, I would volunteer myself to do this because I am a company man. They went to a hilltop about 200 to 300 yards away from the Playboy Corporation offices. And they looked into the offices and they could see, obscene material, right? This is a 1979 case. Things that were obscene in 1979 are now actually in children's elementary books, right, in this school. So just so you know, we've come a long way about our definition of obscene. So regardless, they see these things and they're like, hey, that violates California law. It's, and so forth. But here's the point, though. Can we really call this plain view, right? Because here's one question. Could they have seen those obscene items with the naked eye from a lawful vantage point? And the answer is no, right? The answer is no. The binocular aided surveillance violated the defendant's reasonable expectation of privacy, right? So here's the deal, right? Here's the deal. There is just no way to see with the naked eye into these private areas without the binoculars. And you're going to see that is a fundamental and seminal issue in these cases, right? When we evaluate using something like binoculars or maybe even technology and so forth. Now look at this, People versus Arno also says this, if the purpose of the optically aided view is to permit clandestine police surveillance of that which could be seen from a more obvious vantage point without the optical aid, there is no unconstitutional intrusion. Okay, let me just translate this in normalese here, okay? So if there was like a sidewalk in front of this building and the cop could have seen the exact same thing from standing on the sidewalk, there is no constitutional difference, according to Arno, going back 300 yards and using binoculars. Because at the end of the day, should the person inside that office expect privacy when somebody could have just walked by and saw the same thing? The answer is no, not according to Arno. And that is probably the right answer, right? However, when he or she is in their office and they know that nobody really can see in here unless you use binoculars, should they expect privacy in their private office? We're not talking about Burger King. We're not talking about a lobby, right? We're not talking about an open field. We're talking about a private space. And that is the difference, right? So what about optical aids? Arno says, if the purpose of the optical aid is to view that which could not be seen without it, there is a search under the Fourth Amendment. But remember, though, as I said, we're talking about protected areas, right? We're talking about protected areas. Okay. The seminal cases is California versus Ciariello, right? Okay. So what happened here is police got into an airplane and flew at approximately 1,000 feet above the ground. And they looked into the guy's backyard and they saw marijuana growing in plain view. Okay. In plain view from 1,000 feet. Now, the defendant here is saying, oh, that is a search under the Fourth Amendment. You know, you can't look in my backyard. You know, you're in this plane and you're intentionally looking to my backyard. Well, come on, right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. What, you're saying that the government can't fly in airspace? And that's not what the court said, right? The observations by the officers in this case took place within public naval airspace in a physically non-intrusive manner. These are all important for drones. From this point, they were able to observe plants readily discernible to the naked eye as marijuana. The defense expectation that his garden was protected from such observation is unreasonable and is not an expectation that society is prepared to honor. Yep, exactly, John. So the rule here that we can safely say is that unintrusive naked eye observations from navigable airspace is not a search. You notice it's going to come in for the drones, right? Because drones have airspace, right? 400 feet and below, unless you have a waiver. So think about this. Now, Snead is a case that does the opposite, right? What happens in Snead is they go and they hover over this guy's backyard by like 25 feet or so, and they see the marijuana implant. First of all, it must be like a blind observation officer who's like Stevie Wonder up there. Why do you need to hover over this guy's backyard by 20, 25 feet? Can't you see it from a little higher? But regardless, they see it, and they put those observations in a search warrant. So the court is not going to like this. Number one is that this is not necessarily navigable airspace. I mean, you could argue it both ways. You know, but the point is that this is over the guy's air, you know, backyard. It's not over a congested area, but it's over where people might be. But the other point is that this is intrusive, right? This is intrusive. And so what the court has said here is that while appellants certainly had no reasonable expectation of privacy from airplanes and helicopters flying at legal and reasonable heights, we have concluded that he did have a reasonable expectation of privacy to be free from noisy police observation by helicopter from the air at 20 to 25 feet, and that such an invasion was an unreasonable government intrusion into the serenity and privacy of his backyard. So I think one question I would have is, you know, the government could prove that they would have seen the exact same thing from 500 feet, right? Which is what helicopters and airplanes normally have to stay at or above. Would that be different outcome? I don't know. It would be a tough argument because courts are just not going to want to condone such an overkill with, you know, with technology. Enter State versus Vogel. This is actually, if I remember correctly, this is a state highway patrol case. I was going to say, my friend Bernie from DCI over there, I thought it was maybe his organization, but it actually was a highway patrol case. So what happened here in the 80s is that a highway patrol officer doing, line patrols, what we called it, right? Just kind of going out there in the rural areas and looking for disabled vehicles and so forth. He was coming out of the airport and he looked down and he saw what he believed to be marijuana growing in plain view. Now, according to the case, he did his route. He did his line patrol. He came back to the airport and then he got a camera. And the next day he took off again to do his job. And this time he actually took pictures of the marijuana growing in plain view as he was taking off. And he used those in a warrant. Are we good? Let me ask you that. Let me turn it over to you. Are we good based on so far what we've learned? Took a camera to take pictures of what he saw in the backyard during his flight path. Okay. Right. I like what Clint says about Zoom and so forth, right? So generally speaking, the answer is going to be yes, right? Defendant was convicted for possession. I think I actually have a quote here. So the court said, if, for example, a person places a marijuana plant directly on his windowsill so that it is observable from the street, his expectation of privacy concerning the plant is not significantly different from that in the case described above, where the plant was on the sun deck, and thus it is no search to scrutinize the plant with binoculars. So the key here, and I teach this in my search and seizure class, is that if you can see it with plain view, right? If you can see it with plain view, it is really of no constitutional dimension if you then take binoculars to confirm or clarify what you see, right? And but the key here is, can you prove to a court that you would have been able to see that item in plain view with unaided vision when that item is in a place where a person has a very high, reasonable expectation of privacy in offices, in homes, in backyards? Okay. Enter State versus McKelvey. Does anybody hear from Alaska? Because this case is really concerning. So here's what happened. State troopers heard that, it is too cold. State troopers heard, got wind that McKelvey was, I guess, growing marijuana. I got to confirm this on the next, but growing marijuana, you know, for sale and so forth. So there a lot of Alaska State Troopers, AST, they are pilots. So they got into their airplane and they intentionally went over to his property in a rural area and used a magnifying lens to see in his backyard, right? And they used that to for a warrant. Now, I think the question for me first is this, right? Could you see that item from navigable airspace, right? In other words, go back to Arno, right? The California case. Go back to Arno and the Playboy, you know, indecency issue, right? They said that if you could see it from a lawful vantage point, then it really makes no difference that you actually decide to be surreptitious and clandestine and go down, go down the street or whatever, 200, 300 yards. So at the end of the day, the Alaska Supreme Court is going to suppress this, right? Actually, did they say marijuana, by the way? Yeah, grow marijuana. Yep. So what they said is, peering into people's yards with a high-powered lens, okay, when flying overhead has a similar potential to reveal intimate details that a person may wish and expect to keep private. We hold that the Alaska Constitution requires law enforcement officials to obtain a warrant before using aircraft and vision-enhancing technology, such as a camera with a zoom lens or binoculars, to observe the curtilage of a person's home that is protected from ground level observation. Okay. So, all right. So the point here though is, hold on a second. So the point here is that number one, this was decided under the Alaska State Constitution. And, you know, if you've been around for a minute and you've been to my classes, you know, it's very common for states like New Jersey, New York, Vermont, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Montana, Washington and Oregon, Hawaii, in Alaska, to make things more strict for their officers than places like Texas, Tennessee, California, actually, Nevada, and so forth. So, and Zach is right. So they have an explicit privacy protection in their state constitution. So does Arizona, right? And they don't really run, you know, take the ball and run with it and go to extreme. But, you know, they just have this interpretation that their constitution provides. So here's my point. I don't know if this is good law under the Fourth Amendment. In fact, I know that they didn't analyze it under the Fourth Amendment. They analyzed it, you know, under, you know, they analyzed it under the Alaska State Constitution. But I do bring this case up to you regardless, and here's why. When you're peering into backyards, regardless of, you know, you have to be careful, right? And Rick, check your text messages. You got to be cautious, right? That when looking to backyards, especially with drones, is going to be problematic. It's going to cause courts some concern, right? So I actually agree with David that under the Fourth Amendment, I would not uphold this, because I think the question would be, Your Honor, I could see if it's true, Your Honor, I could see the same thing if I was a little closer, right? The fact that I use binoculars looks more like Arno than it does like Sneed, right? Looks like Sneed. Okay. So at the end of the day, though, highly intrusive flying or using magnification to see something not visible from a lawful vantage point may be a search, but also maybe, if not, just it's going to rub your judges a little wrong. So and this is going to come into play with drones. I promise you, I have a point here. Okay. So Dow Chemical is another great case from the 1980s. The Supreme Court took up a few airplane cases in the 1980s. And so this one where the EPA wanted to inspect Dow Chemical, and it was like a 2,000-acre plant in, Zach, where was the plant at? Like Pennsylvania or something? And they were refused, right? And I think PA. And they were like refused. And Dow Chemical's like, go get a warrant. They didn't go get a warrant. What they did is they rented, to my knowledge, they rented the most sophisticated camera equipment money could buy, right? Well, not your money could buy, because you're a taxpayer, so you paid for it, right? At least your parents did. And so they rented it. They went into this airplane. They inspected the whole plant practically, and they were like, this camera equipment could see wires at 1 inch thick and so forth. And they used that evidence to go get a search warrant. Now, is that a search? And the court said, no, we conclude that open areas of an industrial plant complex with numerous plant structures spread over an area of 2,000 acres are not curtilage, right? And so this is very good for us. I mean, so there's going to be a difference between curtilage and these open fields or these businesses. You know, I like to say that, oh, Michigan, thank you. Burger King doesn't have curtilage, right? Homes have curtilage. Single wides have curtilage, but not Burger King, right? Now, but they did warn us. They did warn us. They said surveillance of private property by highly sophisticated surveillance equipment not generally available to the public might be constitutionally prescribed absent a warrant, okay? So let's just watch this real quick and see if we can get a taste of what the courts would say about something like this.
In the small town of Westport, Connecticut, a drone is scanning for COVID-19 symptoms. And the reaction here is, well, mixed. Police have been flying drones here since 2016 for everything from traffic management to search and rescue. And they can use them to spot and warn people who are gathered too closely. But now, Dragonfly, the company that makes the drones, claims they can also detect whether you're running a fever, sneezing, or coughing heavily, all through a single camera flying 40 feet overhead.
Subtle differences are on like a millimeter type of basis. So if somebody's coughing, you know, like this or like this, it's actually quite a different type of cough actually that they're detecting.
The police chief says this partnership could help the town reopen, and they need every tool possible.
In a pandemic, we'll see the elevated temperatures, we'll see the increase in blood pressure, we'll see the flushed skin. So to have the technology available for future incidents, whether it be COVID-related or something else that comes our way, I think we need to prepare for that.
This is the first time Americans have been scanned for symptoms in this way, and there are skeptics.
I don't know that this technology could distinguish between somebody with COVID-19 and somebody with influenza. I'm inclined to doubt it.
Not to mention that many infected people never exhibit obvious symptoms. And even if it does work, are we ready to be scanned from the air?
The involvement of the police makes me more worried about how this technology might have what we sometimes call function creep, in that it is used and designed for one purpose, but then it gets repurposed for other things.
Do you believe that we're going to have to strike some kind of necessary compromise with the desire for privacy in order to get out of this thing?
Public health has built into it the need sometimes to invade people's privacies.
I mean, somebody said, of course, the East Coast would try to develop this technology. There's probably some truth to that. I think the East Coast mentality there is that because there's so many people in dense populations that they think that they give up more privacy and maybe liberties than they do in Montana. However, obviously, the Constitution is equal. And regardless, though, You know, the thought of government drones buzzing overhead, monitoring the activity of law-abiding citizens, runs contrary to the notion of what it means to live in a free society. So, you know, the point is that drones are a little concerning. Long Lake Township versus Maxon, what basically happened here is that the town used a drone, actually hired a private drone company to record junk vehicles. They went back and forth with Maxon. You know, they thought they were going to clean up the yard and they didn't. And the question is, you know, was the drone a Fourth Amendment search, right? When you're flying over these people's backyards, especially at relatively low altitude to get pictures, pictures of their backyard and so forth. And I think you can appreciate the concern here, right? So the court said that, you know, township's drone surveillance of owner's property in support of its actions against owners in which township alleged owners violated zoning ordinance intruded into the owner's reasonable expectation of privacy, implicating the Fourth Amendment, and was illegal without a warrant or traditional expectation or exception to the warrant requirement. Any reasonable person would have expected low-altitude drone overflight to be trespassory and exceptional. Now, you know, I can't give you that magic line. I can't say, you know, if you can go, over a person's backyard by 300 feet or more or whatever, right? But I can tell you that there is this idea in the courts, and it goes back to 1920s and a case involving airplanes where, you know, a person does not, if you own a piece of property, you do not own the airspace up to the stratosphere. We know that clearly, right? Airplanes are not trespassing on your land, but you do own and you have a possessory interest of that usable airspace, okay, above your curtilage, okay? Open fields are different. We're talking about curtilage here, that area around the home that's associated with domestic life, right? And so my advice to you is, first of all, you know, usually it's never required when you're doing investigations to fly over somebody's curtilage to see what's in the backyard. Okay. You can be off center. You can be over an open field. You can be over a park or a street and see the exact same thing. That's pro tip number one. And unless you have exigency, then of course you're going to be fine under most state laws. But you know, but just I would not go over people's, it's just, if you're not over their curtilage, they cannot bring a trespassory claim. Does that make sense? Right? Now, they can bring a privacy claim if you're using, you know, high-end magnification. But if you're just doing the plain view route with, you know, with maybe one or two magnification and so forth, then you should be fine. But, you know, drones are not like helicopters, okay? I know we have a lot of Supreme Court cases, or two Supreme Court cases on this at least, Dow Jones and Cirillo, but they're, let's not fool ourselves and think that drones are the same thing as helicopters. They're quiet and stealthy. They're cheap compared to helicopters. They don't require highly trained pilots. I'm sorry for my Part 107 pilot here, but I'm going to be a Part 107 too one day when I grow up. It's not that much training. And if unchecked, millions of drones will be used around the country, and they do possess a concern. But at the end, John, at the end of the day, though, here's what I suggest, okay? Under federal law, okay, we're talking a lot of states like Nevada, California has anti-paparazzi laws, Illinois, Utah, a lot of states have filled the void, okay, to restrict these drones, okay, because the courts have not reacted. But generally speaking, if you don't have a law on place, right, like Nevada has some of the most restrictive laws in the country, if you don't have a law in place, then it's a constitutional issue and you should be okay if you're flying the drone in a manner consistent with how the public would fly their drone. In other words, they're being, you know, recreational, they're not, you know, using thermal imaging on homes. They're not using high-level magnification, looking to windows and being creepy like that. They're not flying over people's backyards where they're trespassing in their usable space. They're just flying the drone in a manner consistent with the public and not violating any laws. And I know laws normally don't control the Fourth Amendment, but I can tell you many courts will bring in state laws and say, based on this state law, a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy, right? Because the law says that you can't fly below 200 feet over somebody's backyard, it implicates the privacy insurance. So right to be, right to see is at the end of the day is my advice. And Cliff, so you have a legal right to be in this airspace above a location and don't use Zoom. I think that's, look, I got to tell you, I don't want to say you can't use Zoom. I don't think that's the law, right? Remember the cases that we talked about, right? So I think you can use Zoom, but then you're going to have to prove. The problem is you're going to have to prove that you would have been able to see the same thing without Zoom. And that's not a hard leap to do, but it's something that you have to consider. Okay. We also know that that drones have no privacy interest in remote ID. So that's just a case that came out where the plaintiff said that the FAA can't require that the government can know where the drone is physically. But we know that remote ID just is safety. It tells airplanes, it tells other drones that there's drones around and so forth. Okay, let's go to license plate readers. So I took a little time on drones, and I apologize about that, but drones are probably the main topic here. So running plates is not a search under the Fourth Amendment. I do want to bring up an argument that I think is valid and not frivolous, and this is this mosaic theory. It comes from, the origin is this Carpenter case where the FBI got 127 days of location information based on Carpenter's cell phone. At the end of the day, I think they only used 7 days of that location information in their court case, but they gathered like 127 days. And the Supreme Court says that was a search under the Fourth Amendment, even though Carpenter knowingly or implicitly gave that information to the cell phone company. They said that this was still, regardless, a search, right? And so this mosaic theory, it's just this idea that came from this case, right? The mosaic theory is this idea that, look, even if, you know, it's third-party data and, you know, maybe people shouldn't expect privacy in what Verizon does with your cell site information, right? And your GPS coordinates. You know, if you use a cell phone, you should know that that Verizon is going to get your information. But then when the government subpoenas that information without a warrant, right, with just, you know, with a subpoena, not a search warrant, do they implicate a person's Fourth Amendment rights? And the Supreme Court said yes. And I'm going to give you, actually, do we have a citation on? I know Zach will give me a citation in a second here, but I might have a citation on in a second. So they said that, look, when you have this mosaic there, it's like the courts, you know, the cops can't really learn too much about you from just one piece of information here and knocking on a door there and trailing you for 30 minutes here. But when you get a person's location information, it certainly, I need the citation for Carpenter and Zach, and I'll add it to the PowerPoint. But when you get their location information, you can tell a lot about a person, right? And so, what's this case right here? So, I want to skip this, and I apologize for skipping the cases, but we're running out of time. Thank you, Sean and Zach. So, a really important case about license plate readers is McCarthy. What happened here in a nutshell is that McCarthy is suspected of being involved in narcotics. The Massachusetts State Police put an alert on his license plate that if he's going to go into Cape Cod, then it's going to alert them that he's heading towards Cape Cod, because they know that he normally goes to this park and he does drug transactions. And they got the alert. He's heading to Cape Cod. There's only one way in and one way out, I guess. And they go to the park, they do surveillance, and sure enough, they see what they think they're going to see, which is a drug transaction. They then stop him. They search the car, they find the evidence, and we're going to court. And McCarthy is like, oh, that license plate data is a search in the Fourth Amendment. And the Massachusetts Supreme Court said no, right? As this court, the United States Supreme Court, interprets society's reasonable expectations of privacy over time, the court's overarching goal is to assure the preservation of that degree of privacy against government that exists when the Fourth Amendment is adopted. So they recognize this originalist argument that, hey, what did the framers think they were doing here, right? When they ratified the Fourth Amendment, right? And certainly, you know, tracking a guy through his cell phone for 127 days is crossing a line. I mean, that was just impossible to do something like that at the founding. So, but let's look at LPR data. At the end of the day, they don't give the kind of either private information, and also there's no aggregates of privacy. Like when you look at all these DEA cameras out there, and there's a lot of them, but they just don't give a lot of private information. However, can there be a line that's crossed? And the answer is yes, in my view. Let's imagine a world where there's so many cameras in a city, and they're all feeding into this master database, right? And that the government is allowed, not allowed, but they are able to put a license plate into a computer. And because there's thousands, there's tens of thousands of, you know, LPRs in the city. And I got to tell you, like, Las Vegas is a good example. My friends from Las Vegas, Las Vegas is a newer city. And unlike some of the older cities, like the East Coast cities, Las Vegas has a traffic camera on every single traffic light, like very few exceptions, right? And is it possible to turn every single camera into an LPR? Also, they face forward for traffic congestion and controlling red lights and so forth. But Nevada has a front license plate. In other words, they're going to be able to, for the most part, track. They can also do without license plates, by the way, just by, you know, unique vehicle characteristics. But would they be able to track a vehicle around the city and show you where the vehicle has gone to a very high degree, like almost like GPS level? I believe, I really do, that if the government can replicate that, they can replicate almost like GPS coordinates. And I know there's no trespass here. We're not putting a GPS tracker on it like Jones, but I think it's more like Carpenter, right? And if we can just replicate that level of movement to the almost like GPS tracking, I got to tell you, I think it may be a search, but we are a long way off. I just don't see this happening anytime soon. I really don't. Okay. Well, it'll happen in my lifetime. It's just not going to happen. I don't know if it's happening right now. I know they're working on it. Okay. Andrew says, are there more traffic cameras or prostitutes in Las Vegas? I can tell you with confidence, there are absolutely way more prostitutes. So let's talk about poll cameras. Activity, again, knowingly exposed to the public is usually not protected, right? It goes back to this mosaic theory, maybe. But this is an issue where courts are struggling, right? They are struggling.
And now cameras mounted on LPL utility poles have some residents demanding answers. Several viewers took to our KCBD Facebook page asking questions about the cameras, so we went looking for some answers.
LPL tells us they are part of a police surveillance program. KCBD News Channel 11's Sasha Wilson visited with those residents and joins us now with more. Sasha?
Karen and Abner, one of the two cameras we saw has an LPL logo on it, which police say helps to disguise the equipment. They say LPL is not the only city-owned business which mounts cameras for the police department across the hub city. I talked to one of the residents who voiced his concerns on Facebook. Jason Mendez has lived in this neighborhood for 20 years with his wife and three kids. He says he feels safe here.
For somebody to sit there and just watch and see what I'm doing, that's, like I said, you know, that's invading my privacy. It's very disrespectful. I don't really see anything in it.
All right, let me tell you why he's concerned. Because he's the target, right? I mean, I got to laugh at this, but if he thinks that his house is the one being watched by the poll camera, it's because he is the target of that investigation. And that's why he's all upset about it, right? But look, at the end of the day, you know, could poll cameras implicate a person's reasonable expectation of privacy? Now, before I go on, I do want to answer a question. What about flock cameras? That's kind of like LPR tracks you were just talking about. No. I strongly believe, my friends, that at this age, at this point in time of the technology, that what Flock is doing, and there's all these other companies, I do not believe that these cameras are so in the aggregate, they can really track a person's movements I know they can't, to the degree of a GPS, okay? I understand, and trust me, LVMPD, you know, has a lot of cameras. And they don't, you know, LVMPD is one of the most technology advanced departments in the nation. And, you know, see you, Shane. And they track a lot of people. Like, oh, they passed this camera. They're probably in this neighborhood. They went in probably this apartment complex. But that's not the type of tracking I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, looking on a map, and you can just, like, see where the guy has gone, and that's going to, at one point, you know, one point going to probably implicate the Fourth Amendment. Now, this Moore Bush case is a case at Massachusetts. They tracked this lady. It's a poll camera. They pointed a poll camera at her house for approximately 8 months. This is the picture of the house. She was actually running and gunning. She was actually selling firearms to prohibited people. Well, I should say she was selling it in a prohibited manner, right? And so this is where the poll camera was. And they used this poll camera, 8 months of recording to build a case against her. As the court said, the Supreme Court recognized that a long-term tracking of a person's movements provides an intimate window into a person's life, revealing not only his particular movements, but through them, his familial, political, professional, religious, and I wish for me, sexual associations. And so this, you know, at the end of the day, you know, can a poll camera turn to a search, right? The lower court said yes. And the First Circuit reversed it. They just said, look, at the end of the day, the mosaic theory does not apply to poll cameras. Full story, you know, period, right? But then you go to this Tafoya case out of Colorado, a case from 2021, and they were surveilling this person's front yard. Now, they did catch his backyard, but there is evidence that they could have seen it from the street. And they, you know, from a utility pole, they tracked him for 3 months, and the state of Colorado did not like it, right? They said that we acknowledge that by its own terms, the decision Carpenter is a narrow one and does not call into question conventional surveillance techniques and tools such as security cameras. But the reality is that society has come to accept a significant level of video surveillance. Absolutely, flock cameras are one of them. Security cameras are routinely installed in public parks, restaurants, stores, government buildings, schools, banks, et cetera, et cetera. Additionally, security cameras are increasingly being installed on public streets, highways, and utility poles. A poll camera, however, is not a security camera by any stretch of the imagination. Law enforcement officers did not install the poll camera here to guard against crime, but to investigate suspects. Indeed, the prototypical security camera exists to monitor a heavily trafficked area or commercial establishment. Security camera operators often install their cameras in plain view or with a warning signs to deter wrongdoers. Here, they hid the camera to catch criminal activity, right? Now, the court here did find in under their interpretation of the Fourth Amendment, okay, and in the Colorado Constitution, which is generally speaking the same, they did find that under the Fourth Amendment, that this was a search under the Fourth Amendment. Now, who got it right? All I can tell you is this, okay? All I can tell you is this. I don't know. But I will tell you I'm concerned, right? I do believe, and, you know, I would love Zach to tell me his feelings because he may have a completely, I don't think I've ever talked to Zach, our fellow instructor here, about what he feels about poll cameras. But I do believe that long-term, I'm talking months, right? Not 30 days, not weeks. But I think that, you know, long-term recording, not a live feed, okay? That's different. If you got to put an eyeball on the camera, I think we don't have a problem here. But I think that long-term recording of curtilage at some point is going to implicate a person's reasonable expectation of privacy. You know, look at how you feel about things. What if you found out that the government had a camera on your curtilage and they knew when you left your house and who came over and who left and when they left and all these things. I mean, at some point, are they going to be able to put a mosaic of your life, right? And maybe, right? Our final case of the day is Brooks. What happened here is that the DEA put a camera on this apartment complex in Arizona. First of all, the drug dealer lives in Scottsdale, Arizona. So you know already that this drug dealer is a little bougie, you know what I mean? Doing a little well in his life. He's driving a nice Beamer, selling some drugs from his neighborhood condo or apartment complex in Scottsdale. So they put a 24/7 camera up there for a long period of time. They film the apartment parking lot. They see Brooks, you know, engage in all these drug transactions. Are we good? And the answer is yes, right? The answer is yes. Are we good? Yeah, we're good, right? Because this is not curtilage. So at the end of the day, a camera recording in an area open to the public is rarely ever going to be a search, right? So let's do some takeaways here. So drones, look, at the end of the day, under the Fourth Amendment, I say do exactly what the public can do. Fly in a manner consistent with the FAA regulations. You know, your 400-foot rule, you're not flying over people now is allowed with parachutes. Don't use thermal imaging on houses. That's a case from Kylo. Just fly in a very non-intrusive manner. Don't fly over curtilage if you can really avoid it. That's that Maxon case. I think there's probably some good advice there. Now, the next thing is LPRs. No issue unless they replicate GPS. I think one day, maybe soon, because things, are advancing very fast around here. But at this point in time, I'm not aware of any situation, any use case where a city is replicating a GPS. I just don't think we're there yet. And finally, poll cameras, if it records homes for a long time, I personally would get a warrant, but I can assure you the law is not with me. I'm just telling you that my intuition believes that at some point the Supreme Court is going to have concerns here, that this could be something that's beyond what the framers contemplated, because you're getting more and more originalists on the Supreme Court. And that those people that really try to look at through the eyes of the founding fathers and the framers, and I think that they may be concerned. Okay, so let's save the final questions for our show with Mike Boone and Zach Miller. They probably have a few things to say about this topic. Let's do some trivia, and then we're going to transition right into the show and keep this conversation going. Please sign up for social media, and let's go from there. Now,